Just recently, as Spain heads into the Euro Cup finals on Sunday, deservedly so, I might add, because they have been playing the best football so far. Naturally, a lot has been said about this team in comparison to others in the tournament and in comparison to former Spanish national teams. It's not just me saying that, but the rest of the sports gurus around the world on the internet and in videos and in the newspapers. It's been interesting to hear and see what people from other countries are saying about this team. In that sense, I've acquired a natural Spanish characteristic, which is an obsession with what people from abroad say about Spain. Anyway, I've heard some interesting comments that may not have meant much to those who were saying them or to those who were listening to them, but to me, someone who has been following this team intensely for over 30 years, it stood out to me, or they stood out to me, as something worth remarking on, because what a change it has represented in the way we look at Spain's national team and Spain as a world powerhouse in soccer. One of these comments reminded us that Spain hadn't been in a final since 2012, and they said it in a way that sort of made us think that the years between these two moments had been sort of a failure. Another looked at Spain's renewed success and described it sort of as a new empire that had risen from the ashes of an old one. Time and time again, you hear this as if Spain were a perennial top contender, a true contender. And yet, this is a fairly recent situation for the Spanish, and one which, until 2008, I would say, had little to do with the reality, the psyche of this country when it came to the Selección, its national team. That's right. Up until 2008, no one, and by no one I mean neither Spaniard nor foreigner, had really any faith in what this team could do. And there was plenty of history out there to defend that opinion. Just from the time that I arrived in the early 90s, I could tell you that for about 18 years, it was suffering, and more suffering, as the Spanish themselves say, sufrimiento. Spain for decades had earned a well-deserved reputation as being one of the world's great underachievers in football. When I joined the ranks as a number one fan of Spain's team, there was little this country could brag about in terms of international success, except for a 2-1 victory over the Soviet Union in the Euros in 1964. They were played in Spain, and it was a very different tournament. Only four teams qualified. They played their semifinals and then went on to the finals. And not a lot happened between then and when I arrived. For example, Spain actually hosted the World Cup in 1982, sort of as a show of solidarity with a young democracy emerging from decades of life under a dictatorship. The team scrambled its way to the knockout round only to be ousted by Brazil. It was a dismal performance overall. In 1984, they actually made it to the finals of the Euro Cup, but once again, it was a very different tournament, just eight teams participating, and they lost then. But anyway, there really was not much happening. And let's skip to 1992. That's when sort of my experience with this team began. Spain didn't even qualify for the Euros then. It got knocked out in the final game of the qualifying round by losing to Iceland, of all teams, a disaster of gigantic proportions. I remember reading about it on the plane and thinking to myself, Iceland, how could they do that? Now, although this country actually made a spectacular run years later in the 2016 Euros, reaching the corner finals, as a rule, this should have been a very beatable team for a country like Spain. Then we moved to 1994, the World Cup in the United States. This was my first World Cup experience in a World Cup country. And I tell you, it was an adrenaline-packed experience. It was exhausting to see firsthand how a country like Spain handles, lives, and experiences a major international soccer tournament. They struggled to get on through to the next stage. They tied South Korea and then Germany and then beat Bolivia. Then they beat Switzerland in the round of 16 and were actually looking a little bit better. But then they had to play Italy in the quarterfinals and the mood changed quickly. Italy, mala suerte, as they said. I have to admit that I was a little surprised by the attitude back then. I was like, you know, what the heck? This is, you know, we're there, we're in the quarters, why can't we win? But that was sort of the attitude that the Spaniards would have back then. Even when they played Germany before that, they tied Germany and there was this sort of big national sigh of relief. We didn't lose. We didn't get crushed. So, you know, it was unusual for me to see a country with this potential be so negative at times. Anyway, I remember watching the game in a bar in a small town northwest of Madrid in the mountains of Madrid called Cercedilla. The atmosphere there was both intense and electrifying at the same time. Italy scored first in the first half, and then Spain tied it up in the second half and was pushing for the winner. Then suddenly the Italians made a fast break and scored in the last minute, basically. That was sort of the way it always happened. It had to happen. That's how Spain loses to these great teams. Or at least lost in the past. The entire nation was deflated. I'd never seen anything like it. The papers hailed Spain's courageous match, but lamented the loss in the end. It was bad luck. It was unfair. I remember the player Luis Enrique, who would end up being the coach of the national team years later, had his nose broken in the game from an elbow. There was no, this was before the days of the VAR. And so no one called the Italian player on that. And it sort of ruined the experience for me at first because I was such a downer. Little did I know that this would be sort of the standard for many, many years to come. And that's how it worked. And now let me show you why. Because 2 years later, in 1996, we had the Euros. It was in England. And once again, the group stage was shaky. But we made it into the quarters again. But this time, against England, the host country. And Spain played a great game, a heroic game, as they would describe it, but once again was eliminated. And it was about at this time I was starting to see this pattern I was telling you about. The country would play a lot of unconvincing games and then face a big name like Italy or Germany or England, play fantastic or heroically, but lose. And that was just sort of part of it. I also noticed that the Spanish in general were terrified of many of their rivals. In addition to those three, you also had, I don't know, France, Brazil, and Argentina. You know, one time they had a draw in December for the World Cup, and the experts were already making their calculations that if Spain actually won their group, then unfortunately they would have to play Brazil in the round of 16 or something like that. I mean, this is 6 months before a game. And they looked at them as not just opposing teams, but the titans of soccer, the elite of which Spain was not a part. So they were losers, and this losing attitude was basically psyching them out. As a rule, in my opinion, we were losing half our games before we even took the field. It was a defeatist attitude at its worst. Continued results were equally disappointing and sort of reconfirmed this situation. In 1998, the next World Cup in France, Spain had high hopes with their new young star, Raul, but they blew it big time. They didn't even make it through to the knockout stage. They got sent home early. In 2000, the Euro Cup took place in Belgium and the Netherlands, who were joint hosts. Spain struggled throughout the group stage. They lost their opener to Norway, for example. Then they pulled off a miracle game in the third game of the group stage against Yugoslavia, scoring two injury time goals to go through. I actually remember that game vividly and jumping up and down because it was unbelievable. It was a miracle. And then the quarterfinals were next, and France was the opponent. The French had a devastating side at the time and sent the Spanish home after a 2-1 victory. I remember Raul blowing a penalty kick in the last minute, which would have tied the game. In 2002, the World Cup was held in Japan and South Korea, and this time the team looked a little bit better, more competitive. They won all three games in the group stage and with plenty of goals. Once again, it reached the quarters and faced the host nation or the co-host nation, South Korea. This time, luck or unluckiness, to be more precise, came into play. We sure could have used the VAR back then. Two legal goals were called back due to refereeing blunders. If a VAR had reviewed them, they would have certainly turned those calls around. It should have been a could have been moment, but it wasn't. The same old result. In 2004, took the Euros to Portugal, and the bad thing for Spain wasn't just Spain's results, but Portugal. Portugal actually lost its opening game, and they were in the same group as Spain. Now, why should that matter? Well, I could see it coming a mile away. That would mean that when Portugal and Spain played each other in the final group game against each other, and Portugal would have to win if they wanted to go through. And basically, that's what happened. And Spain got sent home early again. I guess the only good thing was that they didn't have to travel very far. And then in 2006, it was back to Germany for another chance. The Spanish were looking impressive in the early stage. Once again, they won three games in the group stage and were looking promising, but a powerful French team with Zidane, Henri, and Ribéry, and others easily tore the Spanish apart in the round of 16. The French would go on to play the final against Italy, which was when Zidane actually had that famous, he lost it and headbutted an Italian player. But anyway, it was a very good team. So anyway, to sum up here, in 1992, 1994, 1996, 1998, 2000, 2002, 2004, and 2006, 8 straight tournaments, and Spain never managed to get past the infamous quarterfinal round, which for many is a true test of the success of your tournament, especially if you were a country like Spain. It was never in the Final Four, at least in the last 40 years, basically. And by now, you started to think it would never happen. The suffering, as I was telling you about, you get knocked down, you get tired of soccer, tired of losing, and then 2 years later, you've had time to forget about everything, and you get all excited again and are ready to suffer again. But the final word was that they were underachievers. Then came 2008 in Austria and Switzerland, and everything changed. The first three games were a success, like other times, other editions. Then came the feared quarterfinals against the beasts, Italy, a worst-case scenario. The ghosts from the past were here to haunt them again, or at least it seemed before the game began. And on top of that, the game finished in a locked tie after 120 minutes. It was 0-0. There would be a penalty shootout, sort of just the way the Italians liked it. And the Spanish, traditionally, for the same reasons, would hate it. Another disappointing exit seemed imminent. But then suddenly the Spanish team came to life. The penalty kicks they scored were crisp and well struck. Spanish goalkeeper Iker Casillas stopped two Italian tries, and to everyone's delight and surprise, Spain was through to the first semifinal in 24 years, and probably the first real semifinal at a real tournament of this magnitude. And I've always said that this was the moment when Spain turned it around. It was the turning point for Spain's luck, for its success on the international scene, that quarterfinal against Italy in the penalty shootout. Once they got there, once they passed that test, when it came to achievements, the sky was the limit. The load was taken off their backs, and the worst was over. So Spain won the semifinal against Russia fairly easily, 3-1, and the great final against another beast, Germany, and Spain winning 1-0. It wasn't easy, but they showed poise and had a great team to back it up. It was their first title in 40 years. Victory can be attributed to an excellent team with an excellent technique and an excellent coach named Luis Aragonés. That raised the stakes for them in 2010 as they entered as one of the clear favorites to win it all in the World Cup in South Africa. This time the team was under a new coach, Vicente del Bosque, who had also been coach for Real Madrid, and he was an excellent choice. Spain was the clear, or at least one of the clear favorites to win it all. It couldn't have started off in a more disappointing way. They lost their first game to Switzerland 1-0. Suddenly you heard all the complaining about the typical Spain screwing up again. It is true that this poor team had a lot of pressure put on it. The expectations were extremely high as the team was extremely talented and they had never won a World Cup. And their opening loss just made things tenser. Basically, they had to win every game from there on in if they wanted to win the World Cup. And as we know, that's what happened. There were low-scoring games. Spain's style was generally low-scoring. It wasn't exciting soccer, I'll grant you that, but it was extremely disciplined and beautiful in its own way. It was the famous tiki-taka style developed mainly by Barcelona, I would say, under Pep Guardiola, who was not so surprisingly a midfielder himself when he played. This style depended heavily on an excellent midfield if it was going to work. And Spain had definitely won the greatest set of halfbacks in history, led by Xavi Alonso and Iniesta and a whole group of others. The quality was excellent. The precision with which they passed the ball was jaw-dropping. And they had a good goal scorer, David Villa, and a very good defense. So they weren't going to score a lot of goals, but the way they played was not exciting, but it was beautiful in its own way. The final was a hard-fought match against the very physical Netherlands, who was also looking for its first championship. But in the 116th minute, Iniesta hammered the goal that was heard and seen around the world, dedicating it to his friend, a professional footballer named Daniel Jarque, who had died 1 year before. What a beautiful moment. And the Spanish team was finally world champions. So they'd done it. They had broken what seemed to be like a curse, but it really wasn't. It was just a new generation of kids with a lot of talent, a lot of quality, the right game plan, and a new mentality. This golden generation went on to win the 2012 Euros in an even more convincing style by thrashing the Italians 4-1 in the finals. Isn't it a fitting way to end that cycle when they started with the agonizing penalty shootout 4 years before against the Italians? This time it was basically a cakewalk. And that was the Spain many people have come to see as a near annual power in world soccer. But people forget that, you know, generations come and go. And they also forget that many years ago, in fact, just a few years before that, Spain was a perennial loser more than a winner. And that image would return almost as quickly as Spain's dominance arrived. In 2014, they were routed in the opening game of the World Cup in Brazil by the Dutch, almost as if had been waiting 4 years to get revenge. I still remember Robin van Persie's Flying Dutchman header, and it still remains as one of the greatest goals I've ever seen. Spain was stunned, and they never really recovered, and they didn't even make it to the knockout round. In fact, they were the first team in the entire tournament to be eliminated from the tournament, mathematically. And that was a hugely embarrassing moment for the reigning champions, because I don't think that had ever happened. In 2016, the team was back to its old ways, sort of scraping to make it to the next stage, only to be sent home by the Italians, this time in the round of 16. And it seemed as if the former rivals were getting back at their nemesis too, sort of like the Netherlands a few years before that. In 2018, the World Cup in Russia, once again the team had its ups and downs. There were moments that it looked pretty good, other moments it wasn't quite there. The final game in the group stage, they nearly blew it against Morocco when they should have had that one. And that put them in second place and meant they had to play the host nation in the round of 16. And Spain lost in the penalty shootout. Spain was returning to sort of familiar territory, the golden age of their soccer, with the exception of a couple of players had all but gone. Many had retired or were just too old to be on the team anymore. But the style hadn't changed, and opposing teams had learned to play against the tiki-taka style. It was slow, methodic, boring, total possession, a zillion passes, but with little production. And Spain was getting a bad reputation for it. It was almost getting laughed at. In fact, it was getting laughed at times. Something had to be done. They needed to rethink their style, become a little more vertical, and get some goddamn speed. Between 2019 and 2022, Luis Enrique took over. He was the one who had his nose broken in 1994, and he was the coach. He was a former player for Barcelona, especially Barcelona. He also played for Real Madrid, but for the most part, it was with Barcelona. There was some hope that he would make a difference, but little came of it. It wasn't horrible. In the 2020 Euros, which was played in 2021, Spain made it to the semis. And in 2022, it was the same story. A slow, unimaginative, and predictable, as Spain was knocked out by Morocco in the round of 16 in the World Cup. So something had to be done. The new coach took over. His name is Luis de la Fuente. And slowly, almost in a subtle way, has turned the team in another direction, finally. With two young wingers creating havoc on each side and a whole slew of young talent in the middle, Spain has dramatically turned into one of the most exciting teams of the tournament, possibly the most exciting team. In fact, to give you an idea, in the first game when they beat Croatia, they actually lost ball possession for the first time in 16 years, in 136 games. Not since 2008 had they lost in ball possession. And the difference was Spain sort of kicked Croatia's butts all over the field. The tiki-taka was officially buried. And that's the way it's been so far. Spain is in the final, and to get there, it has had to beat Italy, Croatia, Germany, and France, no less. And it has done it rather convincingly. This isn't the same Spain of the golden age, and it's not the same Spain of the losing age. It's a different team altogether. All the same, the old phantoms do appear from time to time. For example, when Spain had to play Germany in the quarterfinals, you could tell that some people were nervous. And they were thinking, oh my God, it's Germany. They're the host team. This is going to be a tough one to beat because Germany is impossible to beat. There's an old saying that the definition of football was a game in which 11 players take on 11 and Germany always wins. But is that true? Well, historically, the record is absolutely even. Spain has won 9 games, lost 9 games, and drawn 9 games, right down the middle. And since 2000, of the 6 times they've played each other in an official competition, Spain has won 4, and of those 4 victories, one was a quarterfinal, the other was a semifinal, and the other was a final. And they've had 2 draws and no defeats. So Spain is actually undefeated against Germany in this century. So maybe we're just going to have to reword that saying. Anyway, regardless of what happens on Sunday, we are certainly at the dawn of a new age for Spanish soccer, and it's a bright future. And that will be all for a different history podcast brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave any comments or questions because we love the feedback. We hope you've enjoyed it. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. And you can also check us out on our YouTube channel and support us by subscribing. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.